Produced by PI Media.
Hi, I'm Ran Levy. Welcome to CP Radio. On February 7th, 2014, Mt. Gox, an exchange for the fledgling computer currency Bitcoin, issued a moratorium on all withdrawals. Their stated reasoning was, quote, to obtain a clear technical view of the currency process, end quote. Speculation and conspiracy theories abounded. Mt. Gox facilitated 70% of all Bitcoin transactions worldwide. Thousands upon thousands of people couldn't access their own money. Protests formed outside the company's headquarters. Bitcoin's value plummeted by over 50% in mere days. Then, on February 24th, the company went dark. What soon became clear was that Mt. Gox had been hacked. Not just hacked, squeezed for all it was worth. Much of the world's total supply of Bitcoin was simply gone. The hacking of Mt. Gox wasn't just a seminal moment. It changed everything. Like COVID-19, 9/11, Michael Jordan, there was a time before Mt. Gox and a time after. People woke up to the fact that cryptocurrency was no longer a utopian plaything, but an insecure asset that could disappear from your wallet without you knowing it and without any means of recourse. At least, that's what should have happened. Try Googling blockchain hack or cryptocurrency hack on your phone or computer. Here, let me do that for you. Here are the results that come up on the first page of my search. Hackers drain nearly $200 million from crypto startup Nomad. Report $1.9 billion stolen in crypto hacks so far this year. Hackers steal another $100 million in crypto from a blockchain transfer protocol. And lastly, second biggest crypto hack ever, $600 million in Ethereum stolen from NFT gaming blockchain. Because of how Google works, I'm only seeing stories from recent weeks. If we expand to 2022, the picture becomes far more grim. In April, a hacker used the Ukraine war as a guise for a malicious flash loan, stealing over $180 million in Binstock coin. In June, the Lazarus Group, a North Korean APT, preyed on the popular emerging blockchain Harmony, stealing $100 million to probably fund the Kim Jong-un government. In March, Lazarus fished employees behind the blockchain industry's most popular game, Axie Infinity, making out this time with over $500 million. Today, over a dozen years after Bitcoin was invented, and nearly a decade since its most traumatic moment, the blockchain industry has failed to mature fast enough to meet its skyrocketing popularity. Thousands of companies, millions upon millions of people, and $1 trillion are floating around it, yet at the same time, billions are lost every year to sophisticated and amateur hackers alike. Why is that? What's going on here? Could it be that blockchain technology is simply insecure by nature? Or is there something we're all missing? Something that can save this industry and the millions of people who've invested their hard-earned money into it from squandering billions of dollars every year?
At a very fundamental level, just what is a blockchain and how does it work?
Okay.
Oded Vanunu, head of product vulnerability research at Checkpoint Research.
Blockchain is a distributed database that really stores all the transactions on a concept of decentralized network.
The most basic difference between a blockchain network and the kinds of networks you're used to is that blockchains aren't centralized, at least in theory. No one government or company or person is supposed to control it, but rather everybody who participates in it has a share of the control.
That means that everyone can join the network and get a copy of the network, which is the copy of the blockchain. And there is no third party, or there is no some entity that control the transactions.
As an analogy, imagine if, instead of Mark Zuckerberg running things, having a Facebook account gave you a partial stake in the company. Everybody with a Facebook owns parts of Facebook, so in the end, no one cyber person can control it. This idea, decentralization, is the basis for all things blockchain, cryptocurrency, and another term you may have heard thrown around lately, Web3. You can think of Web3 as a kind of internet of decentralized applications.
Web3 is platforms that, as I said, front-end technologies like Web2, HTML, JavaScript, whatever. And this is like the applications, the platforms. However, these platforms' business logics is based on entering or pulling and pushing data to and from the blockchain distributed database.
Let's use an example. One of the most popular Web3 platforms today is called OpenSea.
You can consider it like the Facebook of the NFTs.
NFTs, non-fungible tokens, are digital items like images, videos, or video game accessories for which there is only one copy. So, for example, you can create a one-of-a-kind digital artwork and put it on OpenSea.
And once it's available on the blockchain of OpenSea, it means that you are the owner of this object. Everyone knows that because this is on the distributed database. And then once you have this kind of object, anyone can access to OpenSea blockchain network and can offer a price for it or offer all the functionalities that OpenSea allowed on the system. So you can have a business logic of a profile and friends and everything around it.
Sounds fine in theory. But how can I prevent others from stealing my NFT? How can OpenSea, or any other Web3 app for that matter, implement any kind of security measures if there's no single entity running the ship? Is any of this secure?
First of all, the blockchain as a technology is the most secure technology.
Most secure.
Why? Because the blockchain basic thing is that every block has a transaction info, which can be any data. There is hash. There is the previous hash, which is like allowed to the chain of the block once you have the previous hash.
Basically, data is stored in blocks, chunks in the network. The data runs through what's called a hash algorithm, a complex mathematical process that spits out a kind of secret code. The code looks like a completely random series of letters and numbers, but it's related to the data in the block and the data in the block that came before it. You can think of it like, well, a chain or maybe a house of cards. Every card is balanced against all the others, such that if you mess with one, you'll ruin the whole tower. A hacker can't tamper with any card without making a huge mess that's obvious to everybody else. Then, beyond the fundamental structuring of blocks, there are other security layers that add nearly mathematically certain security. The most important of these is consensus algorithms, proof of work, proof of stake, and more variations therein. In a decentralized network, you need rules that allow people to agree on things, changes to the network, for example, or which transactions are legitimate and illegitimate. Hence, consensus protocols.
To actually approve blocks by mathematical challenge solving.
The exact rules and mathematics involved can get a bit complicated. In a very simplified sense, though, consensus protocols function like voting systems. The system is arranged such that no significant action on the network, be it a change to the protocol or malicious manipulation of a transaction, can pass without a majority of participants agreeing to it.
The chance that you will be able to change or to take control on the blockchain network is almost impossible. Unless you are managing to take control on all the nodes or 51% of the nodes of the network, which is impossible.
Altogether, when balanced effectively, blockchains can be nearly unstoppable. It's why, for example, Bitcoin has never been hacked. You heard that right. The Bitcoin network has never once been compromised in its entire history. So what about all those news stories, those billions of dollars that are being stolen seemingly on a weekly basis?
The problem begins with the platforms that are starting to use the blockchain network.
Blockchain is, in IT terminology, a back-end technology, a database structure. The software that runs on top of it, all those Web3 apps,
eventually, the platforms are built through Web2 technologies, which is the web, which is like APIs and a lot of input options to your application.
They're called smart contracts, but really, Web3 apps are just B2C software. Users interact with them much as they would regular apps. They're coded by developers with ordinary features, a domain name, UI, logins, and so on. And as we know of the technologies we're used to, developers sometimes make mistakes.
Most of the things that we see on the cyberspace, on the cyber war, or the vulnerabilities that we see out there that's been exploited by cybercrime is mainly due to web vulnerabilities and smart contract vulnerabilities.
But the same kinds of web vulnerabilities we're used to exist for blockchain smart contracts.
And we need to understand that the web and the smart contract are actually the gates into the blockchain network. So if these two parts will not be built correctly, it will give hackers a very high chance to take a lot of assets. And just like to understand the numbers, in 2021, according to CNBC, there were like around $14 billion that been hijacked from blockchain networks. And all these hacking campaigns were basically done following exploitations of softwares, of platforms, of users that were all connected to a platform that were connected to the blockchain. So let's take an example. Let's take, for example, that me and you are both having users in, for example, some kind of a platform that's connected to the blockchain. And let's assume that there is a vulnerability on the platform. And the vulnerability allows me as an attacker to send you a crafted link that coming from the platform. And once you click on the crafted link, the exploitation is happening and I'm getting a permission and access to your wallet.
Your digital wallet with all your cryptocurrencies, all your NFTs.
But then the question becomes, if hackers can get around blockchain's inherent encryption security by triggering ordinary software vulnerabilities, then what's the point of all of the fancy blockchain stuff?
Okay. Well, this is exactly why we are pissed off.
It may be that because, in some ways, the blockchain is so secure, the hashing, the proof of work, and so on, people simply don't see the much more obvious, much simpler security risks.
And the risk there is very, very big. Cybercrime shifted their priority to blockchain projects. They understood that now there is like unique open window. So now they can eventually in one attack, which is not required so much sophistication, they can hijack dozens of millions. This is changing the game.
Earlier this year, an enterprising attacker saw the unique open window. They came up with a plan: circumvent the blockchain's inherent security and instead target those more normal web vulnerabilities in Web3 apps. But which Web3 app to choose? How about one of the hottest in the world? The Facebook-like platform where millions of people are minting, trading, and showing off their six- and seven-figure NFTs. In the next episode of CP Radio, we're diving deep into the hack of OpenSea, an event that exposed millions of dollars in assets belonging to innocent, unwitting victims and the endemic security flaws that threaten billions more every year. That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. For past episodes, visit Checkpoint's research blog at research.checkpoint.com, and you can follow Checkpoint Research on Twitter or follow me at @ranlevy. That's R-A-N-L-E-V-I. CP Radio is produced by PI Media. This episode was written by Nate Nelson, sound design by Yotam Halachmi, and hosted and edited by me, Ran Levy. See you next time. Bye-bye.